No sad farewells, no tear dimmed eyes, where all is lost and the soul never dies.
All right. Where is that place? Don't all scream it out at once. Where is that place? Heaven, in the kingdom. There you go. You're both right. Okay. The earth dwellers, the heavenly kingdom. What's the heavenly kingdom? Who's up there? Who said that? The devil? The devil? Yahweh, okay. Okay, don't. All right, my ears are scared me there. Okay, yes, I hope he ain't up there, because Yahweh can be up there, yeah. And his son, Yeshua, right? So he's up there with his son. And that's who's in heaven. Who's on the earthly? Who's in the earthly kingdom? Lucifer? I can understand there's principalities down here and old Satan is down here on the earth, but is there another kingdom down here on earth? No? There you go. The church is the earthly kingdom. But it's the eternity. It's an eternal kingdom. Because guess what? What we're making right here is like a rocket ship that's going to take us up to heaven, right? I always look at it's almost like, think of yourselves as aliens from a planet, another planet. And so the Most High, which we would call Yahweh, right, sends us to this place called Earth. And he gives us instructions on how to get back home. And it teaches us how to create a spaceship, a.k.a. the kingdom, the church. And in that particular spaceship, that's how you get back home. So it's an analogy, but it's true. Okay, so we're here on this earth. This is not our home. We sing a song, right? This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore, right? Because it's not our world. We're in the world, but we're not of the world. And just like the analogy would be to having let's say every product that you buy, for the most part, if it's in China, sometimes it doesn't come with a schematic. But if it's broken down, it has a schematic. It tells you exactly how it operates, an owner's manual, if you will, right? Well, the owner manual for each and every one of us is the Bible. It tells us how we got here, gives us our history, tells us the nature of who we serve, how to serve him, and how to get back home. Everything is in here. And the kingdom that we're a part of is that process of getting back home. The kingdom right here is the church, okay? We're going to finish some of you that were here. We were looking at the Ten Commandments, Exodus chapter 20. Go ahead and go to Exodus chapter 20. And in the first part of that, starting with verse 1, it says, "And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." Okay, when we're trying to figure out applications to the Bible, in the sense of, is it talking to them? Is it talking to us at this particular time? Okay, who is it talking to? Who's speaking? Who are they speaking to? So, and God spake all these words, Moses says. God's saying, I am the Lord thy God. Okay? So if he's talking to a group of people, ask yourself, who are these people? Yes. Yeah, we started with verse 1. Exodus chapter 20, verses 1. So in verse 2, it says, I'm the Lord thy God. So it's talking to you, thou, thee, you, okay? Now, is he talking to? Yes. His chosen children. What are they called, his chosen children? What are they going to be known as? Huh? Well, later on they would be, but in the Old Testament, the Israelites, okay? Yeah. The Israelites, okay? The Hebrew kids, the Hebrew people, right? His chosen ones, the ones that had followed his path, chose to follow him. So you have a lineage out of Seth. We all know in the Garden of Eden, we had Adam and Eve, and then after them, they had kids. They had Cain and Abel, two brothers. And then Cain killed Abel, right? Cain didn't follow God's commands. Abel did. So you think, okay, here's Abel, good kid, following God's commands. Oop, he's dead. His brother kills him. There goes the good, nothing but the bad. But later on, what happened? They conceived again, another child, Seth. And then out of his generation, that's when men started worshiping God again. So now we see later on, whoever these people are, we're going to find out who they are based on verse 2. What does verse 2 tell us? Look at verse 2. It narrows it down to who he's talking to. Why does it narrow it down in verse 2? So we're dissecting. We're in Exodus chapter 20, verse 2. Anybody? It's right there. Look at verse 20. And I want you to tell me who God's talking to. Verse 2. Right there in verse 2. Who is he talking to? Okay, we know he's talking to the Israelite, but I'm asking you, based on verse 2, how do we know that? There you go. Okay, that's what I want you to see. I want you to dissect it. I am the Lord, thy God. He's talking to certain people when he's delivering these Ten Commandments. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. So we know the story of Moses. We know the story of the Hebrews that were slaves in Egypt, and how Moses was chosen by God to go and deliver his people out of Egypt. So now we know who we're talking about, right? We're talking about the children of Israel. Okay, and some people may say the Hebrew people because, you know, we want to get to that point where they become, well, I guess we're already there at this point. So we're the Israelites. The land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So they were enslaved, right? So they were enslaved. He brought them out. Now, what does he tell them in verse 2? Verse 3, excuse me. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, let's talk about gods. What are gods? Anything. I like that point. Doesn't have to be a stone carving, right? A Buddha statue. Doesn't have to be a statue of a saint. It could be anything. So let's talk about that. Look at the world today we live in. And let's name some gods. Let's bring it home, close and personal. What are some things that we see as God? Ah, I see that. I know what that means. Everybody knows what that means, right? Money. Dirty lucre. Filthy, dirty lucre. As they would say in the old English. Filthy, dirty lucre. That's what it is. It's dirty, filthy money. Okay? Now, what makes it dirty, filthy? It's not. Money's not dirty, filthy, right? Well, if you look at it under a microscope, maybe yes. But is it how you use it? How you think about it, right? So money can be used for good things. Money can be used for bad things. I can have $1 million and not lust after money. It just happened I made some good decisions. There's some good Christian people who are millionaires. Okay? I know I got a chance to know one. Thank God. Helped me out tremendously. And but does a lot of good things for preachers, different preachers. And this man uses his money wisely, supports the church, and helps the needy. Okay, so money, having money is not bad. What does it say is the root of all evil? There you go. Love. Why? Why is love and money bad? They kind of work. Ah, there you go. Loving the wrong one who we're supposed to love. Worshiping the wrong one who we're supposed to worship. You got it. Same thing. Now that money becomes your God. Because God is love. And we are supposed to worship him in love. But if you love money, guess what? That's your God. Because every thought and imagination is going to be on that money. You hear people, and I can't remember, it's not coming off the top of my head right now. It's a famous guy that's always talking about finance and money. Not Art Linkletter. What is his name? He comes up with all kinds of sayings. But one of the sayings that they come up with, and the elite use this, is that competition is a shame. Okay? It's a shame to have competition. They'd like to knock out the competition. Money that you have is never enough. You're always supposed to be getting more and more money. It's never enough. Whatever you have, if you make millions, you know what? That's not enough. You need billions. If you have billions, that's not enough. You need trillions. Exactly. And they want a monopoly. They don't want any competition whatsoever. And that's what you see today with the money going to that, what they call the 1%. A lot of people have heard of that, right? So you have the most of the money and wealth in the 1% of the population, and it's just growing. And the middle class in America is just shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And that 1% is just growing and growing, eating up all the money, right? All the resources. And it's not enough. And they go to the Antarctic. See what's over there. They can get to the moon. We're going to see what resources are on the moon. We can get to Mars. What resources are on Mars? And just raping and pillaging the towns, in a sense, you know, because that's what's important to them is power and money. And that's the most important thing to them, so it becomes their God. Now, I heard somebody say over here, TV. Can the TV become your God?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I see, I watch 8 hours of TV a day, and I read my Bible maybe 30 minutes a week. Who am I putting first in my life? The TV. Okay, the TV. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, you got news, you got science, you got entertainment, you got education, right? There's all kinds of good things on TV, right? Can't be all bad, right? What do you think the TV was designed for? Entertain you? Uh-oh, there we go. Somebody hit it. The great controller of minds, purveyor of thoughts, programming the subconscious. You know, garbage in, garbage out, my mother used to always say. Subliminal programming, the whole bit, it's there to guide you into a thinking a certain way. You look at society that watches television, okay, and the filth that they put on television. So we have to remember it's not a statue, okay, that can be our God. It's whatever we love, L-O-V-E, we put before anything. Now let's continue on. We've only talked about money, and we've only talked about the TV. What else?
Bottle of whiskey.
Bottle of whiskey, okay? So we're going to put bottle of whiskey in a category. We're going to put it in a category of alcohol, right? Because not everybody likes whiskey, right? Some people like wine. Some people like beer, okay? Vodka, you know? A liquid happiness, let's call it, you know, in some cases. yes?
I would say
traditional holidays
like Christmas, Halloween, all
that. We'll get to that in a little bit. Hold that thought. You're right. We're going to hit the alcohol. We're going to have the fire water right now is what we're talking about, okay? The category of fire water. How can fire water become your God? How does it become your God? Huh? Okay, how did money become your God? Huh? You put it before God. What is? Somebody says, what was it? Huh? You have a desire for it, but the L, don't forget, the L-O-V-E. Okay, you love alcohol. Okay, you love fire water. Fire water first. When you wake up in the morning, you're thinking about how you're going to get your fire water. You go throughout the day, you need that fire water. You go to bed at night, thinking about a little fire water before bedtime, and maybe, hopefully, I have some fire water when I wake up. Okay? That's your God. Alcohol is now your God. Because that's what you love. That's what you think about all the time. That is idolatry. That is idol worship. Now let's go to Christmas. Okay, we don't have too many kids in here, so hopefully I won't get any bad letters or kicks in the shin. I tell you, I thought I was going to not make it out of here one Christmas. But the Christmas tree. Now, Zechariah talks about them worshiping the tree. They used to worship the tree on the high hills, the tree god. The tree god is who they worship instead of God. And they would put tassel around it, gold and silver. And does that seem familiar? A pine tree, and you fasten it, okay? You fasten it down so it won't fall. You put tassel over it, and then all of a sudden, presents are under it. So what does that tell the kid? Christmas. And then we say Santa Claus. Who is this? Satan Claus, more like. But Santa Claus they come up with. What does a reindeer have to do with Christ? Okay? Not even his birthday. Okay? So it's a pagan holiday. And so now people will go to church twice a year. Once on the Christ Mass and once on Easter. Okay? Easter, they call it. You know? Both pagan holidays have nothing to do with God, nothing to do with Christ. So now these pagan idols, Santa Claus, becomes your God. These fake holidays can become your gods. You know, anything we put before the real Creator becomes our God. So what other things can we think of in life that can become our God? Okay, possessions. Oh, possessions, possessions. Well, at least people don't care about possessions. They won't kill anybody to get any possessions, right? They won't steal anything to get possessions, right? They'll take your gold out of your mouth. I mean, seriously, Nazi Germany. You know, those who suffered in Nazi Germany, before, when they were exterminated, or some of them prior, I heard some stories that the gold was ripped out of their mouths. Okay, so yeah, you have people that are into materialistic things. What do they do to materialistic things? They love materialistic things. Okay, that's how now this materialistic things become the God. So now resources are my God. That's what I think about. I think about going and taking every possible thing I can take. All resources, all gold, all silver, all diamonds. Do we have people like that today? Probably find them on that one percentile, right? Okay, that's all they think, the big globalists. It's a global idea to take as much wealth as you possibly can, and there's no limit to taking wealth. That becomes their God. That's what they think of. Some of them perceive themselves as being gods, enlightened ones, they call themselves. Jealousy. Jealousy is coveting. And that's another thing that we find in here. And coveting is a very dangerous thing. I have to watch that myself. Yes? Lust of the flesh. Okay, let's talk about that being a god. Can that female that you lust after become your god? Can that man that you lust after become your God? When everything about your life circles around that individual, okay? That's a human flesh, Okay? That's a human. A human can become your God. Somebody that you look up to. There is a television show. I don't watch TV anymore, but this is older, so I remember this. Where more people voted in this television show for the contestants than voted in the election. The gubernatorial election. You want to guess what that was? And it's got idolatry right in the title. American Idol. Okay? American Idol is right in your face. What is a celebrity? An idol. Okay? I fell for that as a kid. I mean, there were certain people I put up here. Linda Carter was one of them. Okay? Lucille Ball. All these great stars, you know. And I'm like, wow, starstruck. And then you learn that these are just human beings, flawed humans, you know. And a lot of times these people that you love dearly and see on TV, you don't want to meet them. You don't want to know who they are in real life, you know. But we're fixated on humans sometimes, and that human can be more important to us than God. We love our celebrities. Look at celebrity worship today, you know. People love celebrity so much that you'll have people that will have those celebrities lie to you or try to lead you down a false trail. Because they're celebrities, they're going to use their celebrity status to lead you down a false trail. And I'm going to, huh? That too. It's a brainwashing that's going on. But you have to be very, very careful. So you have your music idols. You have your television, movie idols. All these celebrities, right? Okay, what else can be a god? So, I laugh, but unfortunately, that's true in today's society. The cell phone has become more important, and what a lot of the counselors are talking about, the psychiatrists and things of that nature, when it comes about the destruction of the family unit, is that they would observe dinner at a dinner table. And you go to a dinner table, and people are actually talking by texting, and they're sitting right next to each other, right across each other, right? So that becomes a god. Okay, that thing that's more important to you, that you go to sleep with it in your hands, texting, you wake up texting, and it's all about texting. I drive a school bus, and I have to honk my horn trying to go through the school because the students are on their phones, and they walk like little zombies, and I will actually run over them in a bus. These are teenagers. These are high school students. But they're so fixated with that phone that they can't even see a bus coming toward them. I would run them over if I didn't let them know I was there or try to avoid hitting them, you know. And it's like a lot of zombies. So technology, in a sense, okay, can be your god. There's people that are into technology, science. There's all kinds of things, philosophy. I mean, we can love something so much that we can replace God. And let us continue on. Anybody else before we continue? Drugs, okay. Alcohol is considered a drug, but then there's other drugs as well, right? That hard, what do we call those? Hardcore drugs, you know? Amen. That's the greatest wealth. It's more precious than diamonds and gold is the wisdom of God. I am the Lord thy God. I brought you out of bondage. Thou shalt not have any other gods before me. Verse 3 says, verse 4 says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. So we shouldn't have any graven images of anything or any likeness of anything that's in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water underneath the earth. Don't worship these things. Don't make images and start worshiping them. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. Now, bowing down to something. You see that happen in certain countries? To certain leaders? You got it. They'll bow down and also kiss his ring. What about in England? Royal aristocracy. Yeah, the king, if they When they had a king, right? Bow down to the king. They had the queen, curtsy. Bow down to the king, the queen, right? Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generations of them that hate me. There are people that hated God. And guess what? They suffered, but so did the generation, their family afterwards, okay, had to suffer as well because of what they did. Curses of the Father. Verse 6, and showing mercy upon thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. One thing I like, he does show mercy on us that keep his commandments. He does, over and over again. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Oh boy, aren't we in trouble? Drop something heavy on your foot and see what comes out of your mouth. Okay, yes, exactly. Okay? And I could punch myself every time I've done that. And I hate it. I mean, I hate it, and I don't want to do that, but I keep doing it. Anybody have any guess of where that came from? It's in me. In me deep. It's in us. Where'd it come from? Huh? Okay. How did it get into my inner? Okay, I allowed it to get there by what means? Huh? Wicked deeds. You know what those wicked deeds were? I watched the television stations. I watched the movies that had the GD word in it, okay? And guess where it went? It went in here. The subconscious part of the brain remembers everything it sees and everything it hears. It stores it like a hard drive. It's there. Garbage in, garbage out. You listen to profanity. You listen to evil stuff, and guess what? It's there. And it will come out. That's why it comes out, because it went in. So I should have put more righteous things in. So how do we balance that out? How do we put righteous things in this brain of ours? How do we do it? That's it. We can pray, but this right here, put it in, right? Just like if we had a cup of water, and that water represented righteousness, and I filled it up, and then the devil wants to pour some alcohol in there. Uh-oh, no room, right? It's already full of the good stuff. But wonder if it's empty, because I haven't studied the Word of God. Now all the bad stuff can get poured right on in there. Right, it's got plenty of room. And so that's why we have to study to show ourselves approved workmen that need not be ashamed, rightfully dividing the word of truth. We have to study, and we have to put the word of God in our thoughts, in our subconscious. Why? So that the other bad stuff won't get in there. But we have to guard it, right? We have to guard it. Don't hear it. If it's a filthy, disgusting movie with nasty, filthy words and deeds, don't bring it into your eyes. Because your eyes will bring it to your brain. Your ears will bring it to your brains, right? Here, what does the monkey say? There you go. Hear no evil, right? Speak no evil, see no evil. That's probably not in the right way there. But if I see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I think that's kind of the way it goes. And so just remember, just don't bring it in that way. Okay. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. And how many people do we see here on the television movies and things of that, television shows that use the Lord's name in vain all the time? And I've got some heritage in Louisiana. And let me tell you, they use profanity like you use regular words, okay? It's a regular conversation. They think nothing of it. When I go back home, it's like my ears are bleeding, okay? They burn because the culture there just throws those filthy, disgusting words out there, and I can't be around it. I have to walk away. I have to take a shower every time I leave Louisiana, you know, to wipe off the filth. And that's, unfortunately, that's part of the culture, okay? And that's what Hollywood's all about, right? To make it okay. To make it okay to see murdering and killing and stealing all these evil things so that you're desensitized, right? It doesn't bother you anymore when it should bother you. That's the problem. It should bother all of us. And then again, we have on verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day and to keep it holy. The sixth day shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, neither son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor maidservant, nor the cattle, nor stranger that is within thy gates. Do we have people that still say that we should be worshiping on the Sabbath? Everybody knows what the Sabbath is, right? Sabado. What is Sabado? Saturday, right? Why are you crazy people worshiping on Sunday, right? Sun worship is what they call it. The sun god. Well, let's go to, and I think we're going to, how much time do we have here, Brother Bond? Okay, 5 minutes. Okay, Luke 13 and 14. Luke chapter 13, verse 14. Luke chapter 13, verse 14. Is this the right one? I don't think this is it. Let me see. Luke chapter 13. 14. Okay, I've got a. There is a. Well, what I wanted to look at, and I've got the wrong verse here, but it is Jesus himself saying that the Sabbath is not. Was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So he was doing good works on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees and Sadducees caught him. They go, hey, why are your people working on the Sabbath? He says, I am the Sabbath. Okay, so he has power over the Sabbath. And what we see is under the Mosaic law that was given to the children of Israel, and some people say, well, that's not to... the Mosaic Law. The Mosaic Law may not, we don't have to be under the Mosaic Law because of Christianity, but the Ten Commandments, that's different. But again, when we read it, who was he talking to? He was talking to the children of Israel that came, that he delivered out of Egypt. He's talking to the very same people. It was given to them. And when Christ came, all the things that we see in the Ten Commandments, we still obey them to this day. There's nothing within the Ten Commandments that we don't still obey. Stealing is still wrong. Killing is still wrong. Idolatry is still wrong. Adultery is still wrong. All these things that we see, we still abide by them. But the one thing that changed was the sabbatical law. And some people argue today that no, it did not change. There's nowhere in the Bible. And that's a difficult one. And maybe we can tackle that because we're going to need a little bit more time to go through that. But at this time, since we only have 5 minutes, I'm going to just go through this. In verse 12, honor thy father and thy mother. We understand that the first laws and principles of obedience comes from obeying your parents. If you obey your parents, you're probably going to obey your teachers. If you're going to obey your teachers, you're going to obey the leaders and the rulers of the land and things of that nature, your police officers. If you don't obey your parents, guess what? Most of those kids end up in foreign school or end up in prison. It starts in the home. You see disobedience in the home. Now, how obedient do you think they're going to be to God? If you're disobedient to a parent that you can see and that you can feel, okay, how are you going to obey something that you cannot see? You're not. They're not going to obey. So that's the primary thing, is to get the obedience to the parents, to train them so that they're obedient to the God that they cannot see. Verse 13, thou shalt not kill. Okay? Premeditated murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. What is adultery? If you're married to a guy or a gal, and you go have sexual intercourse with someone other than that gal or that gal you're married to, that is adultery, right? Or if you as a Christian go and serve another god, that's adultery to God. All right? The church is the bride of Christ. You can't be married to Christ and go over there and start having affairs with another god. Verse 15, thou shalt not steal. Plain and simple, taking what's not yours, right? Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Don't lie, okay? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Covet is the big word. And covet is so powerful, it's like witchcraft. Because what people do when you covet, you want something that somebody else has. And then some people start thinking about it, fantasizing about it so much. I want what he has. And then sometimes, you know what, they'll lust over it so much that these bad thoughts come to their head about how they can get what their neighbor has. Anybody remember a guy in the Bible that God chose? He used him, but he did a bad thing. He saw a lady bathing. Bathsheba, right? And then had a husband, made sure the husband was killed so he could take his wife. Right? So that happens. That comes from coveting, wanting something that you don't have, that somebody else has, and you start thinking about it and meditating on it and stuff like that. That's a horrible thing. And so today we've kind of touched bases on some of the fundamental principles of God's law. Any questions we have at this time? I know we didn't go into great detail about a lot of these, but any questions we have at this time? Or any comments? Anybody have any comment? Okay. If not, may God add a blessing to the reading and the hearing of his word.